at BBC News. World News, this week. I'm John Grimes, BBC News. Listen.
It is Saddam Hussein who lied to his Arab neighbors. It is Saddam who invaded an Arab state.
Mr. President of the United States, you choose to be a lawyer.
We're ready for some action, and we want to put all our training to some good use here.
She's 14 years old, and she's by herself in Kuwait.
By God, we will defend our country with all the means we have. With all the means.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
The feeling is being part of that crew, having touched their lives, and to, in some small way, made a contribution to that aircraft getting off the ground and getting where it needed to go. It's an exciting time to be an Air Force psychologist.
Lieutenant Colonel Frank Emmett is a clinical psychologist in the United States Air Force. He's a respected health professional with unique patients and special rewards.
I think one of the real joys is being able to assist people without having to worry about their ability to pay. We can see a patient and treat him or her for as long we as professionals feel that treatment needs to go on. People have been able to make changes in their life and lifestyles, and to be part of that process has been a great professional reward.
Find out more about the Air Force Health Professions team. See your local Air Force recruiter or call 1-800-423-USAF. And reach for new heights in Air Force medicine.
As part of the largest military buildup since Vietnam, American tanks rumbled off military transport planes in Saudi Arabia. Thousands of U.S. troops took up positions throughout the Mideast and Persian Gulf this week to counter Iraq's invasion of Kuwait and its threat to Saudi Arabia. In the waters of the Gulf, U.S. warships began flexing their muscles.
Merchant vessel Iden, this is U.S. Navy warship.
Okay, sir, go ahead.
Yes, sir, I understand your flag is Iraqi and your destination is Singapore, is that correct?
Yes, sir, hello.
American and British Navy warships have begun to challenge vessels moving in and out of the Gulf, asking them for their registration, last port of call, and destination. But even as U.S. warships attempted to enforce economic sanctions against Iraq, the Iraqi news agency quoted a Baghdad newspaper as saying Iraq knows how to reply to the Bush administration, foil its measures, and penetrate its blockade.
BBC's Linda Alban in the Gulf. The first shots were fired in the conflict late in the week, as a U.S. frigate fired six shots across the bow of an Iraqi tanker. While the Bush administration threatened to turn away supply ships going to or coming from Iraq, a spokesman for Iraq's president, Saddam Hussein, threatened a harsh reprisal against Americans and other foreigners who would be held indefinitely by Iraq.
If there is a shortage of milk, medicine, and other necessities because of this blockade, then the effect would be that these shortages will affect also the children of foreigners as well.
Totally unacceptable is what President Bush is calling the Iraqi government's announcement that it will hold Westerners until the threat of war is over. That according to a White House statement which goes on to say that Mr. Bush is also deeply concerned about the announcement from Baghdad that food will be withheld from the American hostages until the embargo against Iraq is lifted. The White House is urging Iraq to reconsider its decision and says it intends to consult with other governments whose citizens are being held hostage to determine what additional actions should be taken. Joe Bergantino, ABC News, Kennebunkport.
President Bush took time out from his golf and sailing vacation in Maine to return to Washington for a briefing. He delivered a pep talk to Pentagon employees.
Our jobs, our way of life, our own freedom, and the freedom of friendly countries around the world would all suffer if control of the world's great oil reserves fell into the hands of that one man, Saddam Hussein.
And then the president's words grew even tougher.
It is Saddam Hussein who lied to his Arab neighbors. It is Saddam who invaded an Arab state, and it is he who now threatens the Arab nation. And we, by contrast, seek to assist our Arab friends in their hour of need.
Iraq's President Saddam Hussein fired right back.
If
زوقتك الذين اخترتهم.
Mr. President of the United States, you choose to be a liar.
The statement read out on Baghdad radio took the form of an open letter to President Bush. In it, Saddam Hussein again called for a holy war directed against the United States, which he said had invaded and occupied Arab land. He also appeared again to threaten military action against Saudi Arabia in the guise of a move to protect the Muslim holy cities of Mecca and Medina. Saddam appeared to be especially angered by Mr. Bush's characterization of him as a liar in a speech delivered Wednesday at the Defense Department. Gordon Robison, ABC News, Cairo.
This war of words between President Bush and Saddam Hussein is very dangerous. It's a real clash of cultures, and I think one of the worst-case scenarios here is an Arab-American confrontation, because that's not what this is about, and I think we're getting into some very, very dangerous territory.
Mideast expert Judith Kipper with the Brookings Institute with that word of warning. A more dire warning came from Iraq's foreign minister, Tariq Aziz.
It's like to the American government. If they have come to initiate a war here, I think they will be sorry for that, because they will lose that war.
Navy officials acknowledge that Iraqi pilots have more experience because of their war against Iran. Yet American pilots here on the carrier Independence say that the U.S. has the overall advantage because of better training and better airplanes.
ABC's Mike Lee aboard the aircraft carrier Independence in the Persian Gulf. Perhaps the biggest fear among U.S. forces in the Gulf, that Iraq will unleash its arsenal of chemical weapons.
The soldiers, upon hearing that warning, will get their masks on in 9 seconds, complete the attachment of the hood in a total of 15 seconds, then spread the alarm.
Lieutenant Colonel Rick Jackson is the chemical officer with the 82nd Airborne Division in Saudi Arabia. Don't try it. That's the advice of Defense Secretary Dick Cheney.
U.S. military has a wide range of capabilities that could be brought to bear against Iraq should Saddam Hussein be foolish enough to try to use chemical weapons on American forces.
Guns of the USS Antietam, taking part in a military exercise in the Persian Gulf. For U.S. Navy personnel, a variety of feelings.
It's exciting. I mean, this right here is, I mean, most people in the world never get to do stuff like we do.
It gets real boring after a while, and then between launches, you just sit around, watch TV or whatever, and it's the monotony of it all that gets to you after a while.
We've got a great defense system, and I'm very secure with the pilots we have. I believe they can handle anything that they throw at us.
We're not warmongers out here, but we're ready for some action, and we want to put all our training to some good use here.
Like if you're a football player, always getting to practice whenever you can play a game. Now we get a chance to maybe play the game.
I'd like to see other Arab nations defending the Saudi Arabians, because they obviously think that the Sudan dude, or Saddam guy is insane also.
At least one Arab nation was less than firm in its condemnation of Saddam Hussein. In Amman, Jordan, these Palestinian women demonstrated in support of the Iraqi leader. King Hussein of Jordan traveled to Kennebunkport, Maine, to discuss the Gulf crisis with President Bush.
I am as concerned as any within the area. I have tried my utmost to see what could be done initially within an Arab context. And I will continue to do my best to bring a resolution of this problem.
ABC's John Dunvan in Amman says Jordan is literally caught in the middle.
Their position is that they agree with the world's decision to take sanctions, but that Jordan itself simply cannot afford to join in them economically because their economy is so interdependent with Iraq's. Jordanians say that they would go broke if they had to participate. So the middle ground that Jordan is trying to hold to the outside world looks more and more pro-Saddam.
In the streets of Iraq's capital, Baghdad, shows of support for President Saddam Hussein. ABC's Forrest Sawyer, one of the first Western journalists to get into Iraq since the crisis began, got the impression that the Western actions so far have had little effect.
If you go out into the streets, you don't see long lines of customers elbowing each other trying to get at the food. You see people who are going about their daily business. You see shops that are filled with goods. And you hear people say they are convinced that they can withstand any kind of economic embargo.
The talk grew even more warlike as the week ended.
By God, we will defend our country with all the means we have. With all the means.
Iraq's ambassador to the U.S., Mohammed al-Mashat. More than 3,000 Americans remain in Iraq and occupied Kuwait. Some, like businessman Bob Vinton, didn't seem concerned at all.
We're really unrestricted. We've been treated very well.
But there was far greater worry about teenager Vinil Palam.
We haven't been able to sleep or eat. We're worried about Vinnie because she's 14 years old and she's by herself in Kuwait.
Her father, Chandra Palam of Pittsburgh.
Please show some mercy and make sure she's safe and allowed to leave.
This is Chris Wright at the State Department. The U.S. government has determined that about 75% of the Americans stuck in occupied Kuwait are children and teenagers, almost 2,000 of them. The State Department believes that many of the young people were visiting their parents during summer vacation from schools outside Kuwait when Iraq invaded.
Iraq's ambassador to the United Nations, Abdul al-Anbari, said the foreigners are in no danger.
Iraq now is under a tremendous pressure by American Navy, by American forces, and you have all chaotic situation in the region. This is why we are not giving it that priority. However, they are safe, they are comfortable, they are staying in the best hotels.
36 Americans and two British citizens were held at the Rashid Hotel in Baghdad. Kevin Basner, his wife, and two young children were among them. He kept in touch with his sister Patty Heath in Farmington Hills, Michigan.
It is a five-star hotel. It is gigantic. I saw it on TV. There is a pool and which Elizabeth swims in daily. There's gardens, and it looks really nice, but they still can't come home.
ABC's Ted Koppel tried to determine the status of the Americans.
The Iraqis are at great pains to avoid the term hostages. They referred to them, and I spoke last night to a senior foreign ministry official, he referred to them as restrictees. He acknowledged that they are hostages in all but name. They are being restricted from only one thing right now, and that is leaving the hotel.
Throughout the week, reassurances.
I can assure you they are well treated and will be released in due time.
A State Department official confirms that the Americans in the Rashid Hotel in Baghdad have been moved. The official says he believes the Americans have been moved to another hotel in the city. He says U.S. diplomats are demanding to be able to meet with the group. David Ensor, ABC News, the State Department.
It's pretty clear the Iraqi government is doing exactly what everyone had feared, that they were going to take the Westerners who are here in Baghdad, who are here in Iraq, and begin moving them around to the key places that they are afraid will be targets for United States warplanes. They want the West to know that if they move against Iraq, they are hitting their own people.
ABC's Forrest Sawyer in Baghdad. As the tension mounted in the region, more and more Americans found it wise to head for home. This woman from Houston said she and her children decided to leave Saudi Arabia, where her husband is an oil worker.
My mom was on the phone saying, get those children out of there. And I think with what's going on in Iraq, you would hate to not make the choice to come home.
T.P. Bryant of San Antonio was in Kuwait to do some aerial mapping. He and a co-worker managed to escape by racing their car across the border into Saudi Arabia with Iraqi soldiers in hot pursuit.
They were moving towards their guns. Fortunately, we came up from their rear early in the morning and was past them, downrange of them on the Saudi side before they could react. And we feel they probably did not want to shoot for fear of the troops on the other side of the border firing back at them.
Grace De Leon and her family also drove across the border, a five-hour trek through the desert.
We saw a lot of people, a lot of them crossing also. A lot of people through the desert, they didn't make it.
We are opening a new proposal to achieve a lasting peace in the region.
In a message broadcast on Baghdad Radio, monitored here in Bahrain, Saddam Hussein announced what the Baghdad radio commentator called a sweeping peace initiative with Iran to implement the August 1988 ceasefire. John Cooley, ABC News, Bahrain.
Why would Iraq make peace with Iran now? To better deal with its new enemies, according to Middle East expert Peter Mansfield.
Well, I think it's fairly clear that Saddam Hussein wants to be able to withdraw a lot of troops that he has on the frontier with Iran in order to give himself a freer hand in Kuwait.
Iranian TV played music as it showed pictures of the first POWs arriving back home. In the United States, a proposal to call up the reserves for the first time since Vietnam.
I've not signed up anything on that. There's some consideration. We have a ready reserve. We have a reserve that I've been told by a couple of proponents of the reserves are very eager to do their part, but no decision has been made in that regard.
But administration officials say President Bush did decide to activate as many as 3,000 of the so-called weekend warriors.
He's sending a strong signal to Saddam Hussein to show America's resolve. Secondly, he's sending a strong signal to the reserves themselves that, hey, you guys have not made the varsity.
Martin Binken of the Brookings Institute. In Tennessee, 20,000 troops from Fort Campbell got a rousing reception as they headed for the Middle East. Cheerful send-offs as families sent their sons and daughters off to what may become a war zone.
I think he hates to go, but he says it's a duty. He has to go. And all I can say is God bless him and all the rest of them up on that ship.
Praying and hoping everything will be all right and they come back safe. And don't be there so long.
For the American forces already in position in the deserts in Saudi Arabia, some adjustments were necessary to become acclimated to the local conditions.
It's 115 degrees right now, and we've all been instructed on how much water to take in, and you'll see the troopers walking around with their canteens full and maybe a couple of water bottles on their hip as well.
We try and find shade between 12 and 2 and drink lots of water.
This American GI got a quick lesson on the cultural differences.
They get insulted if you show your sole of your foot at them. That is an insult to them.
And what about the custom of the American male of checking out the local females? That's a no-no.
They tell you not to, not even to look at the women, nor even stare at men in the eye, because that's a sign of aggression.
For women, it's awful. It really is. I mean, I respect their views, but you can't wear shorts, you can't show your arms. Even here, you can't even drive.
That Air Force nurse from Stamford, Connecticut, isn't happy with the cultural restrictions either. And as for the whole mission...
Personally, I would say I would hate to die for an oil well.
Those oil wells are what provide fuel for America's homes and automobiles. The price of those fuels continued to rise, and this week it began to have an effect on the airline industry. Robert Baker of American Airlines said the higher prices are on the way.
Every penny that our jet fuel costs go up will cost us $25 million annually in fuel costs.
Some oil companies want to make up for lost supplies from the Middle East by getting more oil from wells off the California coast. Kenneth Durr of Chevron says the oil companies are being tied up by environmental restrictions on drilling and shipping.
It is half of the amount of oil we have lost from Kuwait, and that oil just sits there because we have to bring one tanker a week into Santa Barbara, and they won't give us a permit to do that.
Environmentalist Henry Finniger doesn't buy the argument.
Just because somebody goes crazy in the Middle East, that we now begin to topple all our plans.
Another effect of sending all those troops to the Middle East, a sharp increase in marriage ceremonies performed in Montgomery County, Tennessee, near Fort Campbell. Chief Deputy Clerk Faye Baldwin said a lot of soldiers rushed to tie the knot before they shipped overseas.
Last Friday we had 21, and on a normal Friday it would probably be six, and then Monday we had 32, and we probably wouldn't have done but two or three Monday.
The battle over the budget deficit briefly grabbed President Bush's attention.
I got the power of the veto pen, and I will use that pen to veto any and every spending bill that busts the budget.
The president accused congressional budget negotiators of failing to be aggressive in cutting spending.
All we did was have a bunch of Democrats going after me, going to every special interest, raising hell. And now it is time that the Congress, who has to pass the budget, must pass the budget, get going.
For the first time in 100 years, Yosemite National Park was closed because of wildfires.
With the smoke reducing visibility and three of our roads into the valley closed, the only three roads in and out, we felt that it would not be responsible to have 15,000 people in here.
Yosemite Superintendent Michael Finley. 25,000 acres of the park went up in flames. Greg O'Brien and his family were turned away from Yosemite, so they went instead to Sequoia National Forest. Unfortunately, it was the same story there.
What happened was every place we've been going, it seemed like we've been hitting the fire line. So
so we're just kind of blocked out of there.
The 2 weeks' worth of western wildfires destroyed more than 1,000 square miles of timberland.
The lights went out, so they sent us home.
What do you think about that?
I'm happy, too.
A fire at a power company substation blacked out much of New York City's financial district. The elevator stopped working at the twin towers of the World Trade Center. Workers had to walk down more than 100 flights to reach the street.
Exhausted and drenched. It was just so hot to have to go down all those flights of stairs.
I feel good. I got my exercise, but I don't have the job tonight.
Some stars in the news, and the big story at the Maryland Motor Vehicle Bureau, when World News This Week continues in a moment.
Well, it was Jake's 63rd birthday, and I'd ordered a cake to be delivered over here to the garage.
The biggest things in life are often small.
You ever seen a cake with that many candles on it? It's like a small forest fire. Well, Jake's standing there, covered with grease, and we're all singing happy birthday to him. He said he'd forgotten it was his birthday.
Yeah.
He just stared at it like a 10-year-old kid. Didn't know what to say.
When you go out of your way to help someone, right out of the blue, it's not nothing, it's something, and you're something too.
I put my arm around Jake and said, Jake, as long as you work here, nobody's going to forget your birthday, buddy.
Make a big difference. Do a little something. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Let us break bread together on our knees.
The unforgettable voice of Pearl Bailey. The Broadway star and Goodwill ambassador died this week at the age of 72. Her husband, drummer Louis Belson.
Pearl was the kind of a person that there are some people that care and some people that worry. The people that worry don't do anything, but the people that care, they get off of this, the backside, and do something about it. That's what she was.
Another star performance in baseball this week.
Terry Mulholland pitches a no-hitter and comes within just one wide throw of a perfect game.
The call of the no-hitter on ESPN. Mulholland of the Philadelphia Phillies threw his no-no against the San Francisco Giants. The eighth no-hitter of the season. And a victory this week for Regina Elizabeth Guy of Baltimore. The Maryland Motor Vehicle Administration tried to take away her driver's license because Guy had trouble fitting behind the steering wheel. You see, she weighs 367 pounds. It came down to lose weight or lose your license. Guy would do neither. She was made to take a driver's test. She slid behind the wheel and passed. She and her lawyer claimed it was an example of discrimination against fat people.
I have no intention of losing weight for anyone unless the doctor tells me this is for life or death, and they haven't told me that yet.
And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Hank Weinblum. Engineering by Mary Jo Horowitz. I'm John Grimes, BBC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.